Garner Ted Armstrong. The Worldwide Church of God presents internationally known radio and television evangelist Garner Ted Armstrong with a personal appearance topic specially adapted for television. From the creation.
Let's think about that God that we cannot see and find out whether or not we really believe in the God who is revealed in the pages of the Bible as the creator of all that we can see or know. Now, I believe in lots of things I can't see. I believe in electricity, and I've never seen it. I only see what it does. I can see the glowing incandescent little element in a bulb that is the most natural or near to sun-like form of light that we can have, and so I believe in that, but I can't see electricity. Many electricians do not really totally understand all that electricity does or is capable of doing. Men such as the German by the name of Ohm or the Mr. Stanley Watts have had their names assigned to various characteristics in terms of the potential of electrical energy of certain arbitrary measurements of that kind of energy we know as electricity. So we hear of ohms and watts and all that type of a measurement of power. And yet sometimes electricity skips and hops and jumps and short circuits and does crazy things like reverses its flow of current. So we have reverse current limiters in electrical systems. And we have various fuses and we have circuit breakers to try to protect electrical systems against these crazy things that can happen even a result of a lightning strike to an airplane, for example. You've never seen electricity and yet you implicitly believe in it, explicitly believe in it. You believe in air, you breathe it. Yet air, in a sense of the word, is found in three forms of substances in our environment, in solid, liquid, and gas, and it's all the very same thing. In various different forms, these gases that we take into our lungs, and the lungs are capable of sorting them out. Well, we believe in a lot of these mysterious things of our environment, but we hardly ever seem to equate them with the mind of God, of that being who exists just beyond our dimension. Our minds are limited. Our ears are limited. We cannot hear all the frequencies available. You know the dog whistle. That's the most readily given example. The one that has a very piercing whistle that you cannot hear, a human ear cannot, but your dog can hear it a mile or so away. Radio waves, television waves, VHF, UHF, various frequencies, either low, medium, or ultra high, are absolutely filling your home or your automobile or this auditorium every instant of every day. If you had a little set here that was big enough with an antenna, you could pick up by shortwave probably somebody talking in a Spanish language from South America, somebody speaking in a Russian tongue from Russia, by shortwave right now, because the vibrations are here. But your ears don't hear them. They are limited. Your reach is limited. Your lifespan is limited. Your perception of color is limited. Salt tastes alike to us all. But not all colors appear alike because the human eye, with its cones and rods, can sometimes either be tired, damaged, or defective. And so sometimes people see differently, and that's called color blindness. But if you're not color blind, then everybody sees red as red, and blue as blue, and green as green. And we all learn what that is when we learn as little children to pronounce those colors and to identify them when we see them. In school, we begin to learn the primary colors. Most of us don't go beyond those barest introductions to some of that which is available in this material universe through our high school education. We promptly drop all education in favor of trying to make ends meet, going to work, and earning a living. And scarcely from that time on do we ever bother to pick up a book, a simple encyclopedia, and look up the word moon, or light, or earth, or life, or bird, or sun, or anything else which would tell us about the material universe, the solar system, or the earth upon which we live. Because we've had it with all that studying, now it's time to live life and to get about the daily worrisome business of earning a living. So oftentimes we ignore what the Bible tells us to do in Romans, the first chapter, where it says, even to the ancients, that which may be known about this divine Godhead, the family, which is not three, but only two, and is absolutely demonstrated by that first chapter of the book of John and the first chapter of the book of Hebrews that needs no interpretation, that shows how in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh and came and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory like unto that of the Father, how they held Him with their hands, they saw Him, they ate and slept and walked and talked and lived life for that person for 3.5 years and even longer. and how he then was taken up from them. And the first message that ever came down after they saw him going up following his resurrection and ascension to heaven was that he was going to come again. Only one other member who is called the Son, and he's called the firstborn of many brethren. Now the Areopagites and those philosophers of that time, Stoics, and those who believed in sitting in caves and thinking great lofty thoughts about God and divinity and the afterlife and the never-never reaches of space, were people who loved to hear and to tell some new thing. They too wondered about life in outer space. They thought that the gods with whom they had to do went galloping across the heavens behind various dray horses, half clad, and sometimes perhaps had the back end of a horse ridiculously hanging on to the trunk of a human being. And they thought their gods had voracious appetites like they did, and were wont to go to orgies where they had the vomit trough behind the table. When you would fill it up, you'd simply, you know, lean over like they did, finger down the mouth, get rid of it, say, give me the radishes, and start all over again, because that's exactly what they used to do in ancient Rome. And so the ideas of their gods were that their gods made love, made war, and they had all these human appetites. That is why Elijah, many centuries earlier, said what he did to the prophets of Baal, when he said, maybe he is pursuing, because they believed in the God of the hunt. Maybe he's sleeping, because they believed in gods who got tired. Maybe he is taking a journey, because they believed in gods who went on odysseys after Holy Grail, or after some great treasure guarded by sirens who lured them onto rocks, or guarded by a fire-eaten dragon at the top of an old monstrous cliff in which was the goose that laid the golden egg. They believed in all those stories, those ancient people. But the Apostle Paul said that that which is known and may be known about God is evident, is manifest. Notice beginning in verse 16, he said he was not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, Romans 1, verse 16. For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, from those in whom is the faith of God to those in whom a response, a chord of faith is struck when they hear it. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold back. You have to look up the original, or better yet, get a couple of other modern translations. Kata balo. Kata is bound. Balo means to throw down or throw away. K-A-T-A in the Greek is the prefix. And that word means to hold back, to suppress, or to throw down. Not to hold, meaning to understand. Who hold back the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is evident, is manifest in or to them. For God has shown it unto them. The belief in evolution has been admitted to be, by many people who are its proponents, the desire to explain a creation without a creator, and some of them have been so forthright as to admit it had to do with their own personal appetites and their private lives, because blind chance doesn't say, thou shalt not. Blind chance does not tell them how to live. It says the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because they can know about God. It's evident to them. God has shown it to them. For the invisible things of Him, and He is invisible, He is a God who hides Himself. You have never seen His face. You have never heard His voice. Yet you're here because you say you believe in Him. And you trust in Him for something you want, for many things you want. You trust in Him for your very life's being. In Him we move and live and have our being. You want salvation. You want deliverance from problems of every kind that come to you as a human being. You want to be on the good side of God. You want God to be on your good side. You want to be partners, as it were. You want to be able to talk to Him and call upon Him when you have a real desperate need. You want to be healed when you're sick. You'd like to have Him involved in your private life. A lot of people hang up the little plaque on the wall that says Jesus Christ is a silent partner in every conversation in this home. Well, we could wish that is true in some cases. But people acknowledge that they believe in God by the millions. But do they really? Do they believe in the God of the Bible? Do they believe in His personality, the kind of an individual He is, in His program and His plan and His word? He says He has shown it to these people, the ancients, the philosophers and the skeptics, the evolutionists of today. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, not by a time lapse, not meaning from the time of that time until now, but meaning by looking at that which is created, then the things of God are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead. Werner von Braun, who of course was working in Peenemünde to see if they could perfect the atomic bomb in time to win World War II for Hitler's forces, who later, after that fantastic search, and there's been quite a book published on the subject of how the Russians and the United States Secret Service were on a giant hunt for German scientists following World War II, and the destruction of the heavy water up there in the one plant in Norway where it was so super secret that even though, in this case Sweden, I believe, a neutral country, but at any rate, it was so super secret that even the hapless civilians on a ferry boat one day couldn't be told, though their own government knew they had to destroy it and blast it into the bottom of the lake, and so the civilians went down with it. At any rate, they finally, between the two great governments on their super secret spy search following World War II for all of the great and lofty and educated German scientists working on heavy water and the atomic bomb, managed between the Soviet Union and the United States to capture most of those German scientists and to put them to work. And so they have been the heart and the core of the development of the nuclear arsenals and the nuclear and the space programs of both the United States and the Soviet Union. Primarily, they are German scientists working in the Soviet Union and German scientists working in the United States. Now, Werner von Braun may not have been a dyed-in-the-wool Nazi, but he was a dyed-in-the-wool German. He is also a top scientist. He had amassed a great deal of knowledge about this physical material universe of ours, about the way the material system in which we live and work actually functions. He is a man who was profoundly moved as he studied the universe, astronomy, the solar system, and the laws of physics. And he said nothing so orderly, so incredibly complex, could be anything but the product of a superhuman mind. He said and acknowledged that as he looked from his vantage point of all the education he has had and being the top of the U.S. space program, that there had to be a God, and there is no other answer. It is not fair to say that all of science is anti-God and all that is of God is anti-science, because some of the leading scientists in the world have had to acknowledge that the only answer for creation is a creator. The only answer for orderliness and system is someone to not only install that system, but to sustain it and to maintain it. The only answer for life is a life giver. And the only answer for life after the same kind, which no matter the arguments about uncounted aeons and billions of time to get rid of one organ and replace it with another, if you can imagine a story of the so-called dolphins who crawled ashore, climbed trees, became four-footed quadrupeds, went back into the sea, got gills and began eating, swimming around as fish again, then moved their nostrils clear up from the top, from the bottom of their chin to the top of the back of their head and began having their baby's tail first so they could breathe air. All these stories about, well, we haven't found any fossils yet, but eventually we will. Someday we will find fossils that will show us all the intermediary species so that we can prove that toothed whales and dolphins actually did come originally from fish who became quadrupeds who went back to the sea after they got their lungs and exchanged their lungs and their mouth and all that for a blowhole and became dolphins. But given enough time, anything could happen. That's what people believe. Do you believe that? Do you believe given enough time, anything could happen? What are the chances of you taking a marble out of a sack of 19 marbles labeled 1 through 19, and as you dig in blindfolded, what are your chances of getting marble number 1? 1 out of 19, right? What are your chances of digging in and getting marble number 1 the first time and marble number 2 the second time? Well, now that becomes a little mathematical problem. They start talking about to the first, second, and third, and fourth power, 19 times 19. And by the time you were to get marble number 1, marble number 2, and marble number 3, it's 19 times 19, take that figure, times 19. Now, that's why nobody ever wins at Keno, because they can sit there and watch those little ping pong balls all day long, and it's just not going to come out the way they want it to. That's all there is to it. But it's astronomical, the so-called chances that your cells could be arranged the way they are, that the human body could be formed the way it is. Explosions in print shops do not produce encyclopedias. Now, they talk about the monkey and the typewriter. You've heard that story, too. Given enough time, could a dumb ape type, is sitting there, you know, and punching away on the thing, could it, given enough time, punch out the word at, or of, or to, or by, or it? Of course it could. Any dumb ape could by accident type a two-letter word. Okay, how about a three-letter word? Well, you know, maybe in a few weeks, sure. How about a four-letter word? Probably, given enough time, the typewriter doesn't wear out, and the ape doesn't wear his fingers down to stubs, he could probably type a four-letter word. What about a whole sentence? Now we're talking about those marbles up to the nth power by this time, you see, because a dumb ape with a typewriter typing out a whole sentence in an entirety of the experience of the universe would be very unlikely. Okay, but what about the entire edition of the Encyclopedia Americana, including its addendum and corrections, all bound in fine leather? How about that? Do you believe that? Well, that's what would be required if you are to believe in evolution.
Gardener Ted Armstrong will return right after this message. For your free sample copy of the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Do yourself a favor sometime. I don't know, maybe your child has got a tiny little play chemistry set. Maybe you've got a pair of binoculars or you've got a microscope at home. But if not, maybe you can read about it or something. But you know, it'd be amazing for you to look up the cleavage properties of certain minerals. Mineralogy, minerals, the way they are formed by water in caves, the stalactites and stalagmites of various types of material, the way semi-precious stones and precious stones are formed, is an unbelievable study of the intricacy of many of these forms and yet the laws they obey. Now, you can take those forms, such as orthoclase or plagioclase feldspar, some of the most common stones of all of the world, making up gneiss, G-N-E-I-S-S, the gray stones that you see all over Southern California that we might call granite, just a kind of a white-looking common stone, nothing exciting about gneiss, as it's called. It may not be so nice. That's a German word for it. But you can take orthoclase. That means it breaks at right angles. Orthoclase, right-breaking feldspar. You can take that little piece of orthoclase feldspar and put it on an anvil and take a giant hammer, sledgehammer, and just smash it into powder. And then you can take the powder and you can put it underneath a microscope and you can look at it, just one little grain, and it will have broken at right angles. And you can take that one little grain, if it's possible, and you can smash it into dust, and you can look at those little tiny particles, tinier yet, and they will have broken according to right angles. Those laws that govern the forming of such crystalline patterns as quartz that we can pick up in the caves of Arkansas and that are a tourist attraction in that state, that form and shape the minerals of our environment, are laws which are in action, which actually are unbreakable by humankind. A diamond cutter who would cut a diamond badly by going against the way those molecules are arranged and go across a line where he should not would ruin a beautiful stone. He has to work with what nature has already provided. Now, man has found a way to unleash energy by providing what we call fire. What do we mean, fire? Did man invent fire? Or doesn't fire come from the heavens? Most of the forest fires in California are started by lightning or arsonists. Probably more by arsonists than lightning. But lightning is the most ancient form of fire that anyone can know. Friction produces heat. You can make your hands warm right now by rubbing them together. And you could actually, with enough friction, create fire. Cause a smoldering and watch sticks begin to burn. Now, what is fire, do you know? Well, you may remember one word out of your high school education. It's combustion. What's that mean? That means that it's flaming, that it's burning. It merely means that it's oxygen operating on that item at a certain temperature, which reduces it to gas, light, heat, energy, and finally to ash. But what is fire? No one really knows, do they, what fire is exactly. But what are you doing? You are transforming one form of energy, which might be wood, which is compacted energy, which is in rapid motion, because the molecular structure of wood is made up of molecules of wood, then of atoms, and the atoms are made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons. We don't see the photons of life. We don't see protons, neutrons, and electrons, but we know they exist. And each of them apparently revolving around a nucleus like a tiny little universe in a certain orbital pattern. And so it's rapidly moving. It is capable of being exploded or of being burnt and being changed in form into energy. Now, when man began to tamper with the very makeup of matter, when man began to want to split the smallest possible known particle of matter, called an atom, then man was dealing with the building blocks of the universe, and man was now intruding into an area which could have consequences that even he could not really know. Man had succeeded in finding a key in which he could turn it and he could unlock just a tiny little bit of the unbridled energy that is this earth, the sun, the entirety of the solar system, and everything you can see or know, which is merely spirit, which is energy, which is power, compacted into solid and preserved in certain forms and shapes. And we, as human beings who are told from the Bible, the Word of God, this great creator being, that we are rock and dirt and dust, that we are red mud and clay, that we come from this earth and to this earth we shall return. Sometimes we get filled with vanity and we forget that our lungs need air, and that our bodies need water, and that our stomachs need carrots and beets and parsley and celery and sometimes the flesh of animals and various dairy products and various things which are edible, which can give us what those little tiny roots took out of the rock and the soil, changed in its form, put it into an edible, digestible form which is also palatable to us and becomes a part of our very cellular tissue and makes us what we are. And so we tend to give science the credit and we don't see God. It's no wonder that God is so invisible to us, because everything that man does is so visible. And we give man the credit. The next time you walk past the bank building, take a look at the marble along the side of the building. And look at those funny shapes in that marble. The next time you see a coffee table in a hotel that has some semicircular forms there that is made out of a quarried piece of rock that was shipped all the way from Italy, take a look at that solid bunch of dead marine life that was tossed up in a gigantic flood aeons ago, that solidified into rock, and that you see the actual tubular-like shape sometimes of shells of all types and description in what we might call some type of stone today, like marble and the like. Many forms of marble of many different colors will show you life that once lived on this earth millennia ago. God hides himself now, but his works are everywhere visible. You can know that God is love by discovering love in another human being. The God that allows you to enjoy the taste of a good meal, to even enjoy laughter, the human emotions at every extreme of which you are capable, to enjoy sharing, giving, serving, working with, and helping other people. All of those great and lofty emotions that come through our minds when we hear an especially moving song. Feelings of patriotism, feelings of loyalty, feelings of love, feelings of family, feelings of nostalgia when memories come back. Those feelings and attitudes of which we as human beings are capable are not accidental. They were designed. They were designed by a great God who says he is all love, that he is omniscient or all-knowing, all-powerful, all-wise, that he is from ages unto the ages, and that he has eternal life to give. He comes and he says through his word, here's the kind of a God I am. My mercy endures forever, he says. I will forgive your sins, he says. I am a compassionate God. I love my creation. I'm not instant anger. I'm not total hostility. I am a warm, loving, patient, unbelievably patient God who just wants you to be humble like little children and to live life the very best you possibly can and to be good people to each other. So you look for God at the stones beneath your feet, in the air you breathe, in the water you drink, the birds and the trees and the fruit they bear, at love and life and laughter and other human beings with whom you can share those feelings of this thing we call life. God is visible because the goodness of God can shine out of the faces of other human beings. And in that way, God can become visible to you because you can understand more of His nature as you imbibe more of His nature and let that nature live in you. If you want to see the very best example of the nature of God, the next time you have a chance, get a six-month-old child to look at you and giggle a little when you smile, because God wants us to be like little children.
Free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.